I want attacking purpose for football all the time. Now we're going to have backs against the wall and we're going to fight and we're going to fight hard. You've got to show me all the guts and all the determination you've got in your body. You've got to inspire me.
A marvellous kick. That's as good as you'll ever see. And Footscray back in front. From inside the centre square, Boyes kicked the goal. Boyes kicked the goal. From inside the centre.
Hey Pack, welcome to Danny Boyd, a podcast about the most amazing, wonderful football club in the multiverse, that is the Footscray Football Club.
Oh.
Proprietary Limited.
It's an argument that's harder to make at this stage of the season.
I'm Danny McGinley, he's Tom Boyd, he's Will Anderson. Yeah, welcome back, Will.
Invite me in so I can comment on that hyperbole and that introduction. I was like, oh, hang on, I didn't realise we were doing a Richmond podcast now or something.
No, they're terrible, thank God.
Yeah. Are they?
We beat them.
Yeah, I know. But are they terrible?
Yeah, they're like 1-4.
I know that's the result, but do you think they're terrible? Like, because that's the thing about Richmond now. Because they had such a sustained era of success, ugh. I don't know if it's – I just constantly have that thing of going, yeah, but are they dead? Like, I have a real sort of like Michael Myers Halloween feeling about Richmond where you're like, yeah, we've killed them off screen and we're all very confident the Richmond are dead. But are Richmond really dead? And one night are we just going to be walking down the street and they're like, they're back. Yeah, here they are.
Like Geelong have been since 2007.
Well, the other issue with Richmond is they've got so many supporters that amongst the 150,000 of them, there's got to be a few good players they can pick up in the mid-season draft to supplement their list if they're struggling, you know? And I'm the same. Like, I just, every time that they get a bit of a run on, you just think they're going to take off and run and win 5 games in a row and all of a sudden it's going to be Richmond seasons again, but...
And I think their supporters also think that is the difference.
Oh, man.
Like, Richmond, like, you know, didn't win a premiership for ages either, and then they won one, and then all their supporters were like, yep, this is right. This is what we're meant to be.
My favourite Richmond game when I was growing up was, I was a Carlton supporter, and we had friends who were Richmond supporters, and we went to the Fighting Tiger Fund game, right, which is where they were trying to eliminate their $10 million worth of debt. So we sat in the absolute nosebleeds of the MCG with a mate of Dad's and his kids. And Richmond turned up, you know, to support their club, to raise money, and they lost by 131 points to Carlton.
Yes.
And I tried to talk to him about this the other day, this guy, and he seemed to have erased it from his memory from the last 5 years of success they've had. But
it's my favourite thing about Richmond is when they would, pre-premiership, they would just get a run of wins on, and suddenly they were just lids off, here we go, we're going to win the flag. And then they would do it in a very, to use your term, Will, lose in a very Richmondy way. Yeah,
well, my shared term, Will Anderson's Richmondy trademark is what Jared Waitley likes to call it. But like, really, Charlie Clawson's Richmondy, like, he was the first person who said it. It was a two guys, one cup Richmondy.
Yeah.
But somehow it's become Will Anderson's Richmondy. And every time Jared Waitley refers to it, which is a lot, he always brands it as Will Anderson's Richmondy, which burns Charlie.
Well, I put it to you. Right. I came up with this on a radio show I did with Limo. So this is Danny's and Limo's.
Yes.
Essendon is the new Richmond. They only have to get 3. Look at their fans now. Mm-hmm. They have won all their games or most of their games?
Most of their games.
Yes.
All but one, yeah.
Yep.
Who did they lose to?
Don't know, but they played 5 and 1-4. So by that subtraction, they've lost one.
Yeah, well done. Good stuff. Proving that ruckmen aren't idiots. You know what I mean? Able to do that simple maths on the fly.
Well, see, the
it was good to watch. It was a beautiful mind style. Yeah, that's what I saw.
He works for accountants now.
Yeah.
And I also was a forward, so I'm really not that dumb, you know?
Yeah.
But if you look at the Essendon fans now, they are up and about. Apparently, this is going to be the best Anzac Day ever next Tuesday. But this is why are we talking about these other teams? We're here to talk about
distracting.
The Dogs.
We're distracting ourselves from talking about the Dogs, Danny. Did you not understand what we did?
I did.
We immediately moved it off the topic of the Bulldogs after your bullshit introduction that we're the greatest club of all. That's not us. We don't even feel like that. When we won our premiership and then everything went back to being shit, we were like, yeah, fair enough. Well, at least we fluked.
We had our time in the sun.
Mate, we fluked one. We weren't the best team in the competition. We fluked one and we won one.
And we had
Can't take it away from us.
Greatest story of all time. Well, it is that kind of phase of the season where I thought we'd halfway through that third quarter, I go, man, we're going to beat Port. We're going to probably beat Freo next week. We're up and about. This is going to be sweet. But, yeah, we really sucked in that last quarter, and now I'm at the stage of grief where I think I'm at bargaining, where I'm looking at, I'm trying to see how many games did Geelong win last year in the first five? How many games did Melbourne win the year before? How many? Just looking for any omen that could be linked to this being a blip.
I know what you mean. I have said to a lot of people, I'm like, it's a particularly long season this season. You got to keep that in mind. Yep. But it's not 30 rounds, so we're going to have to get going pretty soon.
I've got another one for you to use as a bargain. Don't worry. Because you can say, you know, but Carlton are fourth and they've only won three games. They've got less than 100% in their percentage points. You know, we win by, seven or 8 points here or there. And we could be them.
Yeah, exactly. St Kilda can't stay that high that long. Nah. Yeah, there's a few there that look a little.
I was just looking through the ladder. St Kilda first, no chance.
No,
Essendon. Essendon, I won't be convinced until they've literally hoisted the cup that they're any good. Exactly. Collingwood will stay up there. Carlton, they've fallen over every year. Sydney, well, last year didn't go great for them either.
Yeah.
Melbourne, you think should come up. Adelaide and Brisbane, not sold on either of them.
No.
So there's the eight. I mean, I feel it's like fine. We can beat eight,
two.
Seven of them.
Exactly. Well, there's two teams in there that we might worry about. But other than that, we're fine.
All right. See, this is great. This is great. Thanks for listening. Okay, no further discussion needed. Flag is ours.
Let's not look into any of the evidence to say that we may be fine. Let's just talk that we can be.
I know, but also, we don't have the same standards as other teams. Like a lot of other teams, like, you know, they've got to win, like they've got to finish top four to be able to make the grand final. They've
losers.
Got to, like, I mean, for us, as long as we sneak in, we're a sneaky chance after that to get some stuff done.
I just realised we haven't finished top four since 2010.
Mm.
13 years.
And we've been in two grand finals since then, mate. So, like, don't worry about the top four. Top four's a myth to the Bulldogs. We just need to get a sneaky invite in. I don't care where we finish, as long as it's the eight, and then it's a whole new season.
Well, we've done seventh. You know, we've won from seventh. We don't need to do that again. We win from eighth this year.
Win from eighth.
Which is, gives us a whole range of possibilities.
That's right. That's fine. Probably only need to win 13 or 14 games to get to eighth. So,
did you watch the game on, when was it, Saturday?
No, so here's what I did instead, because I was, I did my show. And then it
is Melbourne Comedy Festival.
It's Melbourne Comedy Festival at the moment, so I did my Comedy Festival show.
Yep.
And it was on at mostly the same time. So I was like, you know what, I'll wait until the end of the game, I'll get the result, and then I'll decide whether I want to watch the game back or not.
Yes.
Because like it's already too far in now for me to start clean. Because also, I had something else to do that day, my friends, that you might understand as a Bulldog supporter. Because here's the thing I always said about the Bulldogs in 2016. Even the Swans fans on the day were incredibly generous about this is a big breakthrough. We've been through this as well. They've hardened a little since then. Fair to say, retrospectively, they've hardened a little. But
there is a lot more complaints about the free kick count in the past couple of years.
That's right. It's
they
revisionist
did lose by
history.
1,000 points last year. That's why. And it's really adding sort of acid
that's
to the fire.
Right. But in the old days, the Bulldogs were everyone's second team. And the problem was we were everyone's second team because no one had a bad memory against the Bulldogs, right? Like, we'd never ruined the, like, so now the Swans do, so the Swans don't like us as much. Yeah. And I'd never had a grand final memory of any other team, of course. Like, the only grand final I'd seen, we'd won.
Yeah.
So, like, you're not mad at the Swans about that, right? But I'm mad at Melbourne, right?
Yes,
and so, over the last few years, I've just like, you know what? Like, I actually do hate Melbourne. And I thought I kind of got over it after last year. I thought last year it cured me of that.
Nah.
But when I saw that I had a delicious match waiting for me where Essendon had beaten Melbourne, I was like, that's what I'm watching tonight. When I saw the Bulldogs result, I was like, that's not going to make me happy. You know what's going to make me happy? Seeing Melbourne embarrassed by Essendon. That's what I'm going to watch from start to finish and savour every moment of.
Because they hate the Bombers as much as we hate them, because that was the last team to beat them in a grand final in 2000. So that would have been – I hope there was some good close-ups of the cheer squad.
I mean, well, we're talking about Melbourne cheer squad, so there wasn't a lot of them there.
In Adelaide.
No, that's right. They're not going that far. You have to drive past snow to get to Adelaide. So.
Would you guys go to Gather Round? Obviously, it was a bad timing for all of us with Comedy Festival.
Man,
on.
Man, I've already...
A life for me. I'm not coming to Adelaide to watch seven games of football. Or no chance.
If there were corporates.
Nah, God no. No, I think it's a good idea. I struggle to, the GWS, like Gold Coast, even St Kilda, even though St Kilda are on the top of the ladder, like Collingwood will float that crowd capacity. I just can't imagine that there's not a bunch of games that are just so pointless. And we spoke about this last week, that by the end of the last round, particularly if there's a bit of rain, those grounds would be a disaster to play on. And is that better than playing, you know, GWS Gold Coast and Gold Coast, where no one's going to watch it anyway? You know, they're not going to watch it there, not going to watch it in Adelaide.
Well, I think that, like, maybe what you're saying, it's like the flip of that, though. Because, like, if you, like, if they're only going to get, like, 5,000 at the Gold Coast, if they get, like, 5,000 in the Barossa Valley, that's a good result, right?
Yeah, for people in Adelaide, I suppose it is.
And no one on the Gold Coast gives a shit. So no. It's absolutely fine.
They don't watch the game anyway.
It doesn't matter. But I like the idea of it, I've got to say. Because we've had that experience of being in Adelaide for the Adelaide Fringe.
They put on a party. They
and
know how to do it.
That city is so well laid out for everyone to come to town.
It is, everything's close.
It's small enough. Yeah. Everyone runs into each other. So that idea of it being a footy catch-up, like that people can go to events, they can catch up with each other, that it's like a grand final carnival, but that everyone can enjoy rather than just the two teams that are in grand final week. I love all of that. And I feel like Adelaide is the right city.
It's the only city.
Yeah.
Perth, you couldn't do it. Everything in Perth, far away. Like, if you want to go out to the new stadium, it's ages away.
Right.
And there's nowhere to stay near there. The train sucks. So, like, you can't have 18 teams represented there. You can only do it in Adelaide. I mean, you could do it in Melbourne, obviously, but then it kind of defeats the purpose.
Weeks.
Yeah, exactly. You kind of defeat the purpose. Don't do it in Sydney.
But also you need, like, I think what this proved is that it's like, where will the Victorians go?
Yeah.
As well, because the success of an event like this isn't just the home state crowds. The success of, they reckon like 40, 50,000 people went this year. They reckon that it'll be double that next year, which I think is probably true, right? But they're mostly going to come from Victoria.
Yeah.
And so Adelaide is driving distance from Victoria. Like, people can do that. It needs to be somewhere that Victorians can get to, because you can't rely on the fact that you could just put it somewhere and the locals would support it, I don't think.
It's also, you know, Adelaide's filled with expats from Victoria as well. So there's a lot of people over there who are craving seeing their team from Victoria rather than supporting the two Adelaide teams, I'm sure.
But surely a place, you could hold it maybe middle of the year somewhere warm. So Victorians to go there as a midwinter break, somewhere like Queensland or wherever, because the weather was atrocious.
Logistically, it wouldn't work, right? No. But I love the idea of the national competition. If you, like, say over every 2 years, you had two gather rounds a year. So you have one in Adelaide, you have one later in the season that's in, say, like Sydney or like, you know, southeast Queensland or something like that. And then the next year, you know, you do Western Australia and somewhere else. Like, and you go, here's our national competition. We're not relying on the fact that, like, everyone's going to go to the Northern Territory every year, but, like, once every, like, 3 years on a rotation, we'll have, like, one of the two in a place like that. I don't know why you couldn't do it more than once per season. I think if they keep adding extra rounds, I like the idea of going, well, here's a specialist round. It's in a specialist place. Let's all go and have some fun somewhere.
Yeah, I'm sure. And as a petitioner for the players of the AFL, they don't want to play any more rounds. I'll tell you that much. 23 is enough.
Yeah.
And also, the reason why you can and can't do it is because, you know, from all of the political hoorah that I saw over the weekend, South Australia's paying a good penny to get it over there every year. And that's why they just signed up for another 3 years, which I'm sure was a provision on the fact that, hey, if this thing doesn't just completely fail, we automatically get another 3 years and here's how much it's going to cost. So, you know, I think it just depends. Is the government of the Northern Territory going to pay for 18 clubs to get up there? You know, maybe once every 3 years, like, the AFL is sitting there going, this is going to be awesome. Yeah. Because now we can get state money at irregular times in the year as well as just the regular funding they get for stadiums and everything. So
I can't wait for the discussions of will Tasmania get a gather round before they get a team?
Yeah.
I mean, Tassie would be good for gather round.
Hell yeah.
We load everyone up on the Spirit of Tasmania. We just take them all over that way, cut some costs. That's not bad.
Well, that'd be good because everyone have cars then, so they can go from Lonnie to Hobart to watch the two different
Everyone
games.
Get in your car. Just make them sit in their car on the way over. We don't even get them rooms. They can just sit in their car on the way over, drive straight off at the other end, and then you can just play all over Tasmania.
This works.
You can only do it in the first three rounds before it gets really freezing down there, though.
Yeah. Oh, God. Yes.
Let's do it in August.
Yeah.
Well, Bulldogs usually have to play down there around.
That's right. Either start of the year or the late parts.
Yeah. So. Well, do you think Tassie should get a team? You
know, yeah,
While we're discussing anything but the Bulldogs?
Yeah, anything but the Bulldogs.
What would you name it,
though? This should not be the stumbling block, would I? I think they'll work out a name.
Yeah, I'll tell you what their stateside's called is the Tassie Devils.
Yeah.
Great name for them.
And so the argument against that is we've already got demons, right?
Yeah, they're not.
And
so
you
close.
Can't have demons and the devils. But I would argue that demons and devils are very separate things.
Yeah.
Like your demon and your devil. Like your devil's your... your chief. Like, whereas your demons are your kind of legion of, like, you know, they work for the devil. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah. On Buffy, you're fighting a demon every week, but yeah. You never got to the devil.
The devil is the like last boss. Devil's management.
Yeah.
Ironically, it should be the other way around. Melbourne should be the devils.
Yeah.
And Tassie should be the demon.
And one of those two characteristics or characters is a mythological creature, and one you can find in Hillsville Sanctuary as the Tassie devil that you can find. So
correct. It's based on an actual animal. Yes. A lot of our mascots are animals. I don't think anyone's going to confuse the Melbourne Demons and the Tasmanian Devils that is based on an animal.
No. And I must say, having played a bit of footy down there, like Tassie is a footy state.
Yeah.
But the really sad thing that's happening in Tasmania from all accounts is that all the footy clubs on the West Coast are dying. Mm. They're going away because they're all, you know, big farms or small towns, and they're just running out of funds and running out of kids basically to fill the teams. Now, if the AFL can get a presence down there soonish, you'd like to think that that would bring back some of the grassroots footy that's basically, you know, left Tasmania.
Because the funny thing is that, like, we always have this, and look, you know, I understand it, young men, like, you know, maybe don't want to go and live in, like, some of these places. That's what, you know, this is the argument that gets made, right?
Yes.
Like,
but as if that were Gold Coast would not have,
yeah,
you know, that, well, I suppose a lot of players do leave there, but they're keeping a few.
I will say that, yeah, living in northern New South Wales, which is quite close to the Gold Coast, and I go there a lot now, you realise that the Gold Coast is not just surfers paradise, it is the Gold Coast.
Yes.
Like,
yeah.
And surfers paradise is the worst joint on earth. They should bulldoze the entire thing into the ocean. But, like, the rest of the Gold Coast.
I agree.
The rest of the Gold Coast is actually really nice. Yeah. Like, you know, and some of it's quite hip now because that northern New South Wales thing's kind of moved up there. And I get why people want to live on the Gold Coast. I was in Tassie recently in Hobart doing some shows. That place is unreal.
Yeah.
Like, it gets super cold, obviously, in the middle of winter. But other than that, like, it is a beautiful city. Like, if you want a good cup of coffee or, like, a drink or any of those sort of things, you can get them.
Yeah.
Like, there's not 15 nightclubs in town, but there's enough nightclubs. Like, if you are the sort of person who doesn't want to live in Melbourne, if Melbourne's too big a city for you, and it's an hour from Melbourne, like on a plane or a...
You realise you're describing Geelong as well, and they won the flag.
Well, it feels to me like Tassie could just be another Geelong.
Well, I'd agree. And Geelong have had a very, very good track record of recruiting players. And one of the big reasons for that is that if you go to Melbourne and you're attempting to be a superstar, so you're the big recruit, you're battling against the big recruits from Collingwood, Richmond, Melbourne, Essendon, like all of them. The people that have been so successful in Geelong is because everyone in Geelong barracks for Geelong. Mm. Everyone in Tasmania will barrack for the Tasmanian team. And likewise, the best example I'd say is the guys from Perth who have done so well because there's only two teams and everyone in that city and that state barracks for one of the two teams.
Mate, so, Nick Nat is still on the West Coast list pretty much for marketing.
Because he's an icon, particularly in Perth. Like, you know.
That and they can't afford to lose any more players.
Yeah. Well, he doesn't play.
Nah.
He doesn't play.
I think their mascot has had to retire because Nick Nat's now their mascot.
I think there's a genuine... Like, I don't think it'll be as difficult to get players down there as you think, but I think, you know, the real problem with regards to people not wanting to live in those areas is, especially the smaller towns, is that once they turn 18, there's nothing to do. There's no work. And if they want to go and do education, they've got to go to Hobart or Lonnie or in Victoria, they've got to come to Melbourne or any of the big regional hubs. And I think if you could promote the fact that you could play some games out there, get some income and revenue back to those parts of Tassie, I think it'd only be a good thing.
And it's beautiful. And then if you have football clubs come with everything that a football club brings to town. So you've got the organisation around it, you've got the job opportunities, you've got the professionalism.
You've got community centres.
Right, you know. All these teams visiting all the time.
Yep.
Suddenly, I mean, like there's more coffee shops per capita in Hobart than there is anywhere in the rest of Australia. Like, I mean, that hipster sort of Melbourne, you know, because it's the same with Adelaide when you go to Adelaide now, is that there's a whole bunch of people who are like, oh yeah, I could like, you know, pay thousands of dollars per week to rent this little coffee shop in, you know, Fitzroy or in like, you know, Collingwood or whatever and never make a cent. Or I could run this exact same joint in Adelaide and have like the most popular cafe in town. And they're doing the same thing with Tasmania at the moment. And you just think if you have like a big team down there, all those subsidiary industries that grow up around it, because those AFL players do want to go to a bar and have a drink, or they do want to go somewhere and have coffee, or they do want to go to a better gym or whatever the thing is that comes with it. If you build it, they will come in Tassie, yeah, I reckon. I agree.
And the Victorians will travel to Tassie, as you said. It's 50 minutes on the plane. Yeah. And they can get there and back in the day. They can watch a full game. They can go out for breakfast and lunch. We should be on the board of this team.
I think so. I think
we should be brought in.
I'd go down to Mona. I'd be into the whole thing. Yes. It's a nice weekend away.
Get Mona to design their jumpers.
Oh, man. That'd be great. Just like the wall of vaginas. Yeah. That's their away strip. So the Tassie Devils, when they're at home and then on the road, they have a print of the Mona map. Wall of vaginas.
The map of Tasmania.
I mean, it's a play on that. It's a modern play on it.
This works. All right, since we're hitting all the cliched footy chat to avoid discussing the Bulldogs, Will, when should the grand final be played?
So I'm a, I don't like, I mean, on grand final day is my main, I don't really care about afternoon, evening, like night. I think that night games are more spectacular. Okay. I don't think there's any argument to that. Like, I think the prelims are always, you know, better great games. They're better games. They're better spectacles. Yes. You know, I don't know if they're better games, but they're better spectacles.
Well, one particular prelim was pretty good. And that was a Twilight match.
Like, are the skills better or worse? Like, for me, I know that there is that argument about, yeah, the ball getting slippery or blah, 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 blah. But as a viewer, not as a player, obviously, yep. I'm not someone who's been there, but as a viewer, anything that is lost by any of those factors, I think that, like, I hate, like, watching a game on a sunny day where you can see half the field, you can't identify things. Like, I'm a roof closed at Marvel guy. Like, I like, you know, I'm just like, I don't get the point of, like, the sun in your eyes and you're not being able to see the game or not being able to identify the players. But I don't really care is the answer. As long as they still play the grand final on grand final day, I can see the pros and cons. I can see that thing of, you know, it is pretty late at night if you're playing like a night grand final by the time you get to celebrations and functions all those sort of things. And it can be a really long day beforehand. I don't know. I don't care.
Twilight.
I think it looks. Yeah, I think Twilight makes sense. It's a compromise.
Yeah, absolutely. I would say that none of the defining characteristics that make up the difference between a Twilight evening game, say with weather or slippery, I don't think any of them are consistent enough in September, at the end of September, to say, okay, we're not going to do it because of the sun, because it's only sunny about half the grand finals that happen. We're not going to do it because of the rain. Well, it's going to rain at night and day. Yeah. There's no difference. Slipperiness, like, I don't think there's any material difference between when the game's played, other than the fact that, you know, from a nostalgic point of view, I think the experience for fans who are in the city is inherently much better when the game's played at 2:15 or 2:10, because you've got the morning build-up, you've got the sort of pre-game drinks, bars are full, but then that's not 6 hours of that where everyone's tanked before the game starts. And then you've got the evening aftermath, which Swan Street, you know, especially when the big clubs win, comes alive. That for me is like perfection.
Do you reckon, though, that like a lot of people start drinking now at about 10 a.m., 11 a.m. for the game to be at 2:30? Do you reckon they would still start at that time, or would you just, you know, have a bit more of a sleep in?
Maybe? Well, part of the, you'd have to shift all the official stuff around. Like, at the moment, because we're like sliding it around a little, we haven't settled on the idea of, so if you're going to the actual game or around the game, a lot of people go to breakfasts that are starting at like
seven
in the morning.
Crazy.
And so they're drinking because they've paid $2,000 for their ticket.
Yeah, and they
they're drinking pretty heavily at 7 o'clock in the morning, you know. So you'd have to slide everything back for the day. Like, but I agree with Tom, like, that there is. I think that that is the more compelling argument, is the day. Like, how do you time the day?
Yeah.
People are so used to, like, having a barbecue, like, being able to, like, do something afterwards. All those things I absolutely get. I think all the things around it benefit from it being in the day.
Mm.
I think the spectacle itself as a game and the entertainment and all those sort of things benefit from a bit of, like, we know this is stand-ups. It's like,
The crowd's so much
turn off the lights.
Daylight.
This is, feels more like entertainment once you know, Friday Night Lights. You know, it's that idea of, like, you turn the lights on, you, like, you know, it does. It makes it feel like it's more of a show. Yeah. And I don't just mean for the halftime entertainment or the pre-match entertainment. I mean for the footballers themselves. There's something about the fireworks and the lights and just the uniforms and the way that everybody looks that looks better under the lights.
I think it was a poor man's imitation, the Gabba grand final, because they played that at night, but they had to. And of course, you couldn't get exactly like the best A-grade talent into the MCG when no one was allowed to move out of their house in Victoria. But There's such a small sample size to say that it would be the best entertainment. But if you do think about, as you said, the prelims are usually the best spectacle. I mean, the best games that I've ever watched as a fan, particularly when I was growing up, were those grand finals, or sorry, those prelims at the MCG before the grand final. And then the grand final is kind of like the cherry on top for the day. But I think it's just the social thing that is really compelling me to keep it where it is. But, you know, I'm sure they'll change it based on TV ratings.
Yeah, well, that's the difference. Like, I mean, the reality of this situation is there's
just
like
TV, yeah.
Yeah, there's a million more viewers available basically if you play it at night versus play it or at twilight versus during the day. And at the end of the day, like, I mean, they just did another big TV deal. There's no way that they're not going to try it.
Yeah, they'll pull it at some stage. I think Gil's sort of backed away from
it. Yeah,
he
doesn't need it. Yeah,
this year he's like, gather round.
Is he leaving this year?
I'm gonna do Tassie. I'm gonna do gather round. I've got a few big sort of key ticket items, concussion, etc. Yeah. There's a few sort of, you know, bugger bears that he's got to deal with at the moment. He's not picking up the grand final time slot. He's like, whoever comes in, here's your hospital hand.
That one's yours. You deal with it. That's it.
I mean, I'm going to break the rules of this episode and bring it back to the Dogs here. But according to the rumours on social media, our president, Kylie Watson-Wheeler, is one of the favourites to take over from Gil.
Really?
Yeah. Have you not seen that, Boydie?
Yeah. It is one of those things, though, that... Well, according to Caroline Wilson. So, you know. According to Caroline Wilson, she was saying that the general... Apparently the talk behind it is that Richard Goiter is a big fan of hers, but the board wants...
Who is Goiter?
He's the chairman of the... Is he the chairman of the AFL, the CEO of the...
Fitzpatrick equivalent?
Yeah.
The old Michael Fitzpatrick, is that right?
So, chief of operations.
Well, you've got to remember... The AFL is technically a not-for-profit.
Chairman or whatever. Yes, that's right.
It is a not-for-profit. Sorry. As in, there are no shareholders to pay. That's right. The only discrepancy.
Yeah, it doesn't mean they're not trying to make a profit. Yeah. That's not what not-for-profit
means. But the AFL Commission are like the most heavy-handed version of a board around, essentially, the way I understand it, which they actually have like ongoing say in decision-making, whereas... Boards are more like, hey, every month, tell us whether you did good or not. Mm-hmm. Whereas they're a bit more, they've got a lot more political sway, I think, up there. So that's who's going to decide it. And, you know, the argument I would say would be that there's a very good chance they already have decided amongst themselves in whatever factions they are. Now they've just got to flesh out who that's actually going to be. But Gil's around.
Picturing the faction, the choosing, everyone's wearing a black cloak and chanting. Oh.
It feels like if they are going to promote internally, which, you know, obviously seemed to be what they were going to do for ages, if that is what they end up doing, it hasn't really been a ringing endorsement for the next person.
No.
That, like, Gil has had to keep, like, sticking. Because if the person's already there and all ready to go, the fact that Gil's like, I'm not going to leave yet, I don't reckon you can handle this, is not like a...
Yeah, I mean, my sense is that, and again, about as informed as anyone else, my sense is that Gil has been so successful in all metrics of growth for the game that he's left a really big void behind him. Whereas I think when Demetrio went through, Gil was always right behind him the whole way, so it was a very easy-ish handover. And now because Gil's had all this success, and I'm sure large parts of that is just the game's in a really good spot at the moment, the next person coming in is now taking over like a business that's three times the size as the one that Gil took over or whatever the numbers are.
Is there any reason that Gil does need to leave? Like, what's he doing? Like, can we not just twist his arm and say stick around?
I would say...
We've looked around. we're not sure we can do better, to be honest. Like, what do you need to stay?
Yeah, well, money surely isn't a factor.
But I think the fact that money isn't a factor means it's a lot harder to get him to stay. Like, what are you going to give him to keep him?
Sack Hamish. Mate, you know, if you...
Hold it, Hamish.
It's just like, mate, if you don't stay, Hamish gets it. Sorry. Sorry, mate, the column's gone, the broadcasting's gone, we're sacking Hamish. Yep. We're getting rid of Hamish if you don't stay.
My guess would be that having met not many people in his ilk, but understanding a little bit about how they sort of go about things, I reckon he's going to the easy, you know, gravy train that happens after
being on every board in town,
cruising around, doing the big speaking engagements.
I mean, consultant.
What you've got to remember is, particularly after the last couple of years and how much success Gil had running the AFL through COVID, there are businesses all over the world that will ask for his expertise, all industries, because, you know, amongst all of the different sports that were available to be played, the AFL was one of the very few who really didn't shut down at all. So
So I'm what are we got? What are we going to do to keep him then? So like, what is he? What are his key touch points? Like, I mean, because that is lucrative. You can see that less work, more money, more international travel. So what are we going to do?
Delay Tassie. The team, because I'm sure that's the last thing he's trying to get over the line.
Yeah.
So we've just explained to everyone why Tassie's so good. Right. Now we've just got to backtrack.
We've got to just go, well, yeah, but are we right for it yet?
Yeah.
Or can we call them the Gills?
The Gills.
Like, can we just say, look, we're struggling with the name.
Jackie Moon, just if give it to
are,
him.
If you are willing to stay, we are willing to call them the Tasmanian Gills.
The Flint Michigan Gills.
Yeah, you the Sea Gills.
Be star player, coach, yeah. And owner.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, how would you like to play?
We're going to change the rules that no one can touch you.
Yeah. Hang on. Yeah. Gill famously is a St Kilda fan.
Right.
Maybe we just have to give them a flag.
St Kilda. We change it to St Kilda. We're willing to change the name of the Saints to St Kilda to keep you. For as long as you're in the game, they will be referred to as St Kilda.
And they'll win every year.
As soon as you leave, they come back.
This works. So what would I mean, Tom, you're the only one who's properly dealt with our president, Kylie Watson-Wheeler. Would you? Is she, what's she like? She's a bit mysterious. One of the criticisms that's always happening is, you know, she's a bit invisible and stuff. What's she actually like? Is she a ninja?
The problem is, one, I agree with the whole that Kylie doesn't say a lot publicly and she's very busy working in a sort of exec role at Disney. The difference between being an exec role and a president and being at the AFL is there's no more exec role. You're a full-time CEO at the AFL.
Yep.
And, you know, whilst Disney is an enormous megalithic company, I'm not sure that, I don't know what the comparisons are role to role between running the AFL, which is like a multi-billion dollar localized sport with a whole heap of political challenges and a very old school class of people that run the whole AFL. I don't know what the differences are. And one's obviously a shareholder company and one's not. But I would imagine walking in as an outsider into the AFL for the first time would be a bit of a shock.
But particularly because you're going to be surrounded by people who, well, two things would happen. If she comes in and she gets the job, either she's just surrounded by people, Andrew Dillon, Travis Old, these sort of guys who all were in line to get the job, who are now under her.
Awkward.
And men in football always take that sort of thing really well, so I'm sure that'd go fine.
Yeah, yeah. And
I'm sure they wouldn't be plotting against her from day one.
Yeah.
Or they go off. They leave.
Yeah.
And they all go off and get other jobs in other places and she's left without any of that knowledge that and seniority that was, you know, helpful to Gill as well.
Yeah. And the deep state of the AFL that you've got to deal with and understand. And, you know, there's many people that aren't specifically spoken about who are AFL, basically, the deep state of the AFL that aren't necessarily in an official title, you know.
Mate,
imagine the meetings you'd have when you get there. Like, oh, this is a bit different.
Mate, so maybe it's like honest. And so, again, I'm not telling tales out of school. I'm just telling that this happened. I won't tell the details of what it is. But obviously, having shared a radio studio with the president of Collingwood for 2 years, the amount of conversations you hear about what is really happening off air versus like the reality of what's being presented in the media or to the public is sometimes they feel like two completely different things.
Yeah.
And like even factoring in some level of exaggeration or any of those sort of things, like you're really, I mean, particularly because I used to hear Ed and Das talk about football matters or what was going on or what was really going on around things. What I would say is 75% of the time what we're being presented is not necessarily the reality of the situation.
Well, this sounds perfect then. So Kylie Watson-Wheeler works for Disney, probably knows some good screenwriters, people who can create stories. So we could bring it. So she suddenly runs the AFL and we're getting fed all sorts of, Marvel style, what if universes.
So she comes in and she goes, we're introducing phase four of the AFL extended universe.
Yes.
We've brought in the AFLW, we've got Gather Round, Tassie team.
Yeah. I think the more compelling version of that story is her coming in and saying, Drive to Survive has been really successful for the Formula One. They've just got the test or whatever.
On Amazon.
That's on Amazon.
Yep.
They've just done the golf.
Yeah, they've got the Matildas on Disney, actually.
Yep. So they've done the golf. Netflix did the golf. I'm sure they're doing
tennis. There was a tennis one.
They did a surfing one too. Now Disney are going to come in and win the AFL market and do the AFL storyline.
That's a good. The only downside is she brings in Rian Johnson, who did the Last Jedi. Hey, subvert expectations.
Mate, I love that. I'm into that. I'm a big Rian Johnson fan. I think, he could bring a sort of, you know, knives out, glass onion style, you know, approach to, like, you know, mysteries around the AFL.
So the grand final's there between Geelong and Sydney, and the winner is Gold Coast Suns.
Right. You didn't see that coming, did you?
What a twist.
I don't think it's going to happen, is the answer.
Fair enough.
I think that we're safe. I think we'll be fine.
Good.
Yeah.
Good. All right. Look, we've gone 34 minutes. Mm. Let's actually talk about where the Dogs are at before we wrap up and everything. First of all, you wanted to save this for later in the year, but we got a shout out to Cody Waitman for one of the best social media posts this year. Did you see...
I'm off social media, so I did not see.
Right. Well, there was a moment early on in the game where Cody popped out of his shorts. Mm-hmm. In full view of the camera.
Hang on, popped all the way out.
All the way out.
Not some sort of underpants situation.
No. Nope. What we saw. We saw the weight of the man.
Yeah, and how was the weight?
Oh, it's looking good. And he put up on his social, "Hey, Calvin Klein, let's collab."
It's a very creative way to get around the undeniable awkwardness of having your junk flashed on screen in front of hundreds of thousands of people. So.
I mean, that is undeniably awkward. Mm. Like, because it really pops fully out, at least in that situation.
Came out the bottom.
It's a very sort of back of the football conversation in the locker room. But you've got to be quite strategic about the underwear that you wear when you're playing AFL football. You know, a lot of boys wear Speedos for that exact reason.
Yes.
You know,
oh, really?
Yeah, because it's sort of, you know, very...
very protective.
Encapsulating.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, because you are playing a game where people are tackling you in a way that could pull down your pants. Yeah. Like, it's not... So you need some sort of extra protection. What was he rocking? Has there been an explanation of what was going on there?
We know it wasn't Calvin Klein. Mm-hmm.
Commando.
Was it? No.
No, it wasn't
Commando. He can't be.
So what?
You mean it?
There was something.
Shut up. There's no one going out there. Commando.
We probably don't need to do too much deep analytics on this. but let's just point out, we were the away team on the weekend, I believe. White shorts, Commando, not likely decision, I would say.
Especially not in the wet.
No,
of course.
No.
Yeah, all right. Seeing as we've come,
you're very glad to be back.
He does. He's apparently the Danny Rojas of the team. Football is life.
Now, on a more serious note, given we actually are talking about the Bulldogs, we do need to send our best to Joshy Bruce, who, as Steve-O described today, he said that the injuries that he sustained seemed more reminiscent of a car accident than an AFL football match. He's got a broken sternum, he's got three broken ribs, and he's going to spend a lot of time. Now, I've suffered small rib injuries and
not great.
Fuck me, they hurt. The most painful things you can get as an AFL footballer are rib injuries.
The good news is they hurt heaps and you can't do anything about it.
For an indefinite amount of time.
But who knows how long it's going to take to fix.
So we do hope.
Here's how we treat it. Wait, I guess, I suppose.
Yeah. drink some milk.
Yeah. Oh, we're going to. So what do I do for the next 4 weeks? Well, we're just going to do nothing. And then on the 4 week mark, we're going to try.
Yeah.
And if it's no good, it's no good. We're going back to the drawing board. It is scary when you do rib injuries and stuff as well. It's absolutely shit out. So, and he's had such a, you know, and he really quite a good start to the year given that he's become a backman. Mm-hmm. And with Keithy hopefully back this week, that helps a little bit.
Yeah.
He looks like he's going to pass the test from what the Dogs released today. Bailey Smith is probably going to be a bit conservative.
One more week.
Yep. Laith is up for a test this week.
Fantastic.
Our favourite Laith and Vandermeer, which is exciting, and Croz is available, I read before. So they're all good, besides obviously Brucey, they're all good things to hear post that game because we don't need to lose any more players, I don't think.
Well, there really hasn't been much discussion about revenge this week. Like, we lost a final to Freo in very heartbreaking circumstances, and normally that fires you up. You look for, all right, where are we getting those pricks? But there hasn't been much of discussion of it, and really probably because, you know, they didn't beat us. We lost that final. We just stopped at Optus Stadium.
There's also a good argument to say that no one is saying anything about this game because no one cares teams that are 2-8 and Freo have been completely irrelevant all year.
I mean, could they please continue to be irrelevant is what I'm asking.
Just
because,
one more week.
Because I get a bit nervous when we play Freo, particularly there, but just in general when we play Freo. It just feels like things go wrong when we play Freo. Yes. But also... Like, you know, there's such a Bulldogs contingent at Fremantle now as well.
There is. Feels, Garlic, Bob, all your mates.
Yeah, all my old mates Joel are all Freo now. And I've got to be honest with you, I feel like whatever happens, lose-lose this game. It's a real lose-lose situation for the Bulldogs. They've been horrible, Freo. And, like, I don't know if they were that good on the weekend either. So I'm hoping that they continue to be horrible because we really need a bit of a free hit. Like, we are due a free hit. I think
we sort of got a free hit against Richmond with their very depleted list, and you know, them bringing on little leaguers.
But we need like a proper free hit. We need like a warm up. We need a tune up. You know,
I think me and Danny spoke about this last week, maybe on the Patreon, which was, I think we've played a quarter and a half of good footy this year, and we can add another probably 15 minutes from the weekend.
Yeah,
so we're pushing a half of good footy, and like. Yes, there's been moments we've been competitive and all that stuff, but the only times we've looked Bulldogs-esque is in very short bursts across half quarters, maybe 10 minutes at a time.
Do you hear that, Tom Boyd? Bulldogs-esque. Bulldog, you know, like Will Anderson's Richmondy. That's Tom Boyd.
Bulldogs-esque.
And that's when we're playing good. That's what I like about it.
Yeah, but what he was also saying was that he hadn't seen much of it. You need to. I mean, it is a lovely word, but like the context he was using it in was that he hadn't seen a lot of it. So I just think that's important to point out.
Are you watching many games, Will? You're up in northern New South Wales.
You mean live? Well, or just in general?
What's your relationship with footy now that you're up in the sticks?
I say this all the time, which is Charlie and I, we're both up that part of the world at the moment. And we were almost considering adopting the Gold Coast Suns as our second team, but unfortunately the Gold Coast Suns have really not done a lot to lobby for that because it's only 45 minutes drive from where we live to the ground. And we're like, oh, well, maybe we'll, you know, like go and see some Gold Coast games and, you know, go up there and sort of be part of that. But we have not done that as of this stage. We've tried. We keep trying to get enthusiasm going for the Gold Coast and we can't lie to ourselves in that way.
Yeah.
But obviously, the thing that I have realised as I've got older, I was talking to Waleed about this at the project the other day, and he loves to go to the games. He loves to, like, you know, that's his. And I said that whatever it is about my relationship with the Bulldogs is that I still find it very difficult to watch the games live. Like,
trauma.
Yeah. I mean, it is trauma. Yeah. Part of it is trauma. I love watching the rest of it. That's what I've realised, and I think that's why if it wasn't during the comedy festival, I would definitely be the sort of person who went to gather around because I love football.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, and I actually enjoy watching other teams play more than I enjoy. Like, I mean, if I know the Bulldogs have won, I can then go enjoy watching that. But but in a way, I care too much about them to enjoy them. Whereas, like, for the rest of it, like, I can just actually enjoy. So I love football, and I think this season of football, like, this is one of the best seasons. Like, you know, with every and I don't just mean good games. There's been a lot of good games. The best teams are playing more exciting football. Yeah, power forwards seem to be back. Jeremy Cameron and people like that just dominating the game. Like, this stuff is just really good for football. Like, but just all the storylines. There's been draws and blackouts and like, you know, things. Like gather rounds and all these like storylines where you're like, this feels like they're just throwing. I mean, it feels like final season of Game of Thrones to me, where they're just like, we've got to wrap this up. We're throwing everything into this season.
Yeah.
And every week something seems to happen that is. And so I've been loving it. I've been watching a lot. I will often watch like 6-7 games of footy a weekend.
Wow.
Yeah.
What do you do when the Dogs are playing? Do you sit on the couch? Do you stand? I find if it's a close game and tense, the lounge room gets very tidy because I've got so much nervous energy. I'll just go and, you know, organise some toys or go in and sweep and just. My wife's actually quite happy for me to watch a close game.
She puts them on repeat.
Yeah, she's like, You're like, hang on, this is from last year. Shut up. Well, the house is tidy.
Is that what you guys, I mean, you watch it with the sound down, Boydie?
No, I've started watching it with the sound up and then I just can spend my nervous energy just abusing the terrible commentary that I hear, makes no sense.
Like, that's good.
Seriously, some of the, because it's not the fact that they're not good at commentating. I can appreciate it's not the easiest job at different stages, but when they're just wrong, like about what the game, what their players are supposed to be doing, you're like, that's not good. Because I got asked this question the other day. I was doing an event at like a TAFE or whatever, and there was a couple hundred guys there, and they were saying, you know, do you think the media plays a large part in the sort of overall issues that players are facing, right? Because this Jason Horne-Francis thing keeps popping up and up and up and up, and Kane's arguing with every other... Anyway, it doesn't matter. And I said, the real problem is not necessarily the fact that the media are saying bad things about the players. It's not ideal. It's not fair or whatever, but that's what drives revenue in the AFL. It's attention. It's the fact that whatever percentage it is of the Australian population who follow football get their information from about four sources, yep. you know? Yeah. So when they're watching the game and someone says something that's blatantly wrong that makes a player look bad, like that's could be a million people watching that. And that's their opinion of that player for the next 6 weeks until something drastic happens. And likewise, you know, with the volume of stuff that's been spoken about players in the, you know, other forms of media, that's why it's frustrating because no one's watching Jason Horne-Francis play. Everyone's listening to what's written about or reading what's written about and listening to what's said about him. So that's the real frustration for me.
Also, if you don't want people to boo you, Kane Corns is not who you want on your side. Yeah, yeah. Because that adds to it, I think. Like, I feel like at least half of those boos are for Kane Corns.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I mean, I hope that it wasn't Bulldogs fans who were booing him, by the way, on the weekend. But who knows what it is
it's
now.
Because
these things get in the zeitgeist now and they become, but just stop it. Like, you know, stop it. Like, I mean, in any other circumstance, whatever you reckon, whatever you've heard, whatever it is, like, it's over now. Stop it now. Yeah, like,
exactly. You know, booed Josh Dunkley and that was kind of fun because we won.
Yeah, you can boo, like, North Melbourne fans can boo Jason Horne-Francis as much as they like. Yes. But, like, let's
no
not.
One else.
Not
that's cultural
not the,
appropriation.
Not the rest of us on behalf of North Melbourne. Yes. That's right. Let them, they can boo.
That's their
that's
thing.
That's fine. That's, yeah, the rest of us can't boo him.
Yeah, and look.
You know what would be great on the weekend? Me as an adult male is going to go and bully a 19-year-old kid at his workplace. That's what I'm going to do.
Who doesn't even have a vested interest in, like, I don't have a vested interest in his career at all. Like,
at all. You know, neither of the clubs are my club. No, and what I'm going to say is boo to you, man who wanted to go home to his family. Boo!
If anything, if we really just took that and ran with it, we should be, as Bulldogs fans, cheering Jeremy Cameron every time he gets the ball for Geelong. It's like, yeah, you left the Giants.
That's right, yeah.
But that is the case. Like, you know, I think it is absolutely ridiculous that Jason's not going to go into every single game against North Melbourne for the next 10 years going, I left North Melbourne. It was the same when I left the Giants. Yep. Every Giants game was like this extra bit of spice about it.
Yep.
And that's part of what was so interesting about the Giants and Bulldogs games for an extended period of time. That's why people watched them. So, I just, but like, why would we boo him? Like, North Melbourne were no good last year.
That's right.
He's trying to find his feet.
If it was during the final quarter, I'm pretty sure we were booing our own players.
Yeah, for sure. Now, I must ask, the last question I do have to ask, because of where you live, is a Gold Coast ever going to be a club worth keeping in the AFL?
I mean, it is an interesting question though, isn't it?
It is.
Because I think, so... I mean, look, there was a part of me just purely selfishly because obviously, you know, myself and Chris Hemsworth, you know, two big Bulldog supporters live up in that part of the world. And I was lobbying for a while for the Byron Bay Bulldogs.
Yeah.
Like,
that's a good
idea.
I
mean, I just think, you know.
Not a lot of pushback coming from the players.
Right. I'm just saying, guys, come and spend a weekend and tell us if you'd like to go back to Footscray or not.
I've spent 9 days in bar and I'll tell you the answer right now.
But what I would say is I get why, like in a market, like in, like in that sense, like of course it's like Southeast Queensland is absolutely rife for, and I do think, but it's like not now and it's going to, and it's
not, not next year.
No.
It's probably not in 5 years.
No.
That's a team that's been in the competition for 14, 15 years at that stage.
Yeah.
That's getting, it's got to be getting scary at some stage because, like, I don't know what the numbers are now, but it was something like between 10 and 15 million bucks a year the AFL were pouring into the Giants when I was there, something like that. And you're like, you do the math on that. That's you can't buy that back.
No. You know? You've got to lean into that idea of, like, we talk about this on Two Guys, One Cup, but, like, they need an identity.
Yeah.
Like, I just don't feel like they have one.
No. And nothing's worked up there.
No.
No teams have worked up there. They've tried and tried.
I think you've got to lean into the Gold Coast of it. That's my personal feel.
Yeah,
it's like you've got to adapt to it. Like, I mean, bring Carmichael Hunt back, maybe in a leadership role around the club, organise a few golf days. Adam Spencer has suggested maybe a rebrand to the Gold Coast Sins. Yeah. And like then there's an opportunity. We talk about this all the time about these players who get like left out of AFL lists because of behavioural issues.
And then we put them all
We've
up
got
there.
An immediate home for them. We this whack them all in the same place. We put them up on the Gold Coast, the natural home of that sort of stuff, and we just let them be. We get the Candyman involved. We get the Candyman Mansion back together. We get all the players to live there. Like any time. I mean, we always hear this. Like there's some kid that, you know, he's a gun footballer but got a lot of off field yeah. issues. We've got a place for you, mate. It's called the Gold Coast.
I think there's
no rules, no drug tests.
I think there's a very big opportunity to set the next season of Big Brother with exclusively Gold Coast players.
I mean, yes.
Just put them all in a house together.
Perfect.
Film the whole thing.
And like, you know, 20 female like Gold Coast influencers. That's what you want. That's what you really want in the house.
we are really clutching at straws at this stage.
Well, there was that idea though, because I mean, originally, like, I mean, again, this might be one of those stories that is apocryphal, but I don't think it is. Which is that when West Coast were trying to get Chris Judd to stay, you know, because Beck Judd's a Western Australian girl, and there was, I mean, this is the story anyway. I don't know if it's 100% true, but that there was West Coast basically. Contacted a local modelling agency and said, who are your hot West Australian girls? We're going to keep sending them to West Coast parties in the hope that the local players meet a local girl and want to settle down locally. Like, it was basically the idea.
That's good thinking.
And then, of course, Juddy met Beck Judd and then they were like, fuck it, let's get out of here. We've both got bigger dreams.
Hang on a minute. Juddy had a passion for recycling, you know?
Oh, sorry, yes. As did Beck. She was like, you know what? I'll follow you to the other side of the country because I too care about recycling and Judd Heller.
I was a Carlton supporter at that stage and packaging never sounded so good, I tell you what.
So what's your preview of this week against Freo Friday night? What's going to happen, Boydie?
If I had to give a catchphrase for this game, it's the battle of who can play worse, I would say, this week.
Yeah, nice.
I think we are a much better team than them. Yeah. I'm very concerned that we may lose the game, which is not good because it's in Perth. You know, the Perth boys have complained already. They've got an extra week of travel because they've been over to the gather round. You know, there's already petition. West Coast and them are petitioning for additional home games.
Did we just keep going, by the way?
We talked about this the other day. It's like when, because we had Laith on and he told us that was their travel plans. And he was like, oh, that's a good idea, except if you've got two or three kids at home.
Right.
And you're leaving your wife for then two and a half
great
weeks.
Great idea. Oh, right. Yeah. Right.
You know, good, the players, but yeah, I've heard too many stories. Yeah. And they're like,
not going to gather around your family.
We already put you in a hub for 8 months, you know. What more do you want?
You spent time. Will, what's your levels of optimism?
I've gone back. This is what I have found. Definitely, there's been a natural readjustment to my normal Bulldogs levels of optimism, which is not much optimism.
Yeah.
Like, I think every game's a danger game, but Freo, like, I mean, if we lose this, this is one of those games where I still don't know at the moment.
Yeah.
There's bits of me that just think, well, you know what? Like, Bont's dragging us across the line every week when we do win. Like, it's good to see that he's, like, you know, back in form, and I think we're always a better team with, you know, him playing well. It would be great if other people started helping.
Yes.
Like, you know, well, because I feel like...
Liver and Treloar have been great.
Yeah. Yep. But, like, I mean, in a general sense, like, it'd be good if everybody else started helping. I don't think we know what our best team is.
No.
I don't think that... we've certainly had it. We certainly haven't had our best team on field if we do know what it is. So there's upside. We just need to keep winning enough games
to work it out.
Work it out.
Yeah.
If we don't win this one, we won't win enough games to work it out. This is one of those games that we have to win, I think, to keep in it enough to... Because, like, you know, all these other teams that you would have expected you could beat... Like,
yeah,
I mean,
suddenly not beatable. Your St Kilda's and your Essendon's
and teams like this, you're suddenly worried about.
Yeah.
So if we can't beat Freo...
Yeah. If we don't win this week, and I'm not going to say the individual storylines that have existed in the past because you don't want to give any extra oxygen to them, but if we lose this week, all of those very angry and critical fan-based arguments about coaches and players, et cetera, are all going to be like right at the forefront with 17 weeks to go.
Here's the one good thing I will say about like us playing Freo. Like, we have taken – like, The best thing that Rory Lobb might do for us this season is be not playing for Frio on Friday night.
Yeah.
Because every time we would play Frio, he would towel us up. In fact,
that and job I mean, interview.
I'm not in the job of like bag and play. This is a joke, and please take it as such. But he does strike me as one of those guys that, you know, sometimes a team recruits someone because every time you play against them, they play really well. And you're like, he's a gun.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, against us. Yeah. But check how he goes against other teams, because now he doesn't even get to play us anymore.
That has happened many a time over the years, no doubt.
Yeah.
So we're going to win.
Absolutely, we're going to win. Yeah, and we have to.
Based on Rory Lobb not playing for Fremantle. Yes. Yeah, he's lock it in. That's right. Yeah.
At the very least, he's going to be the difference, you know?
Yeah, that's right.
Are the tickets still available for Willuminate this week in Melbourne? Sold out?
Some of the nights are already sold out. Some of the nights there will be still tickets available. I think Sunday, the final Sunday always is actually like, you know, one of those shows where there's probably tickets still available for
It's always a fun show, that one. Yep. And you're doing Sydney Comedy Festival?
Sydney Comedy Festival, Brisbane Comedy Festival. I'm going to Perth for the first time since pre-pandemic. So exciting. To listeners in Perth, I'll be over there doing my show as well, which is fun. And then, you know, a whole bunch of other places that
touring around.
Aren't as big in the football world. Townsville and Sutherland and Wyong.
Comedy.com.au will have all the tickets for Will. My show's still going. It finished in Melbourne. We've got Sydney, Perth. Come see Hardnut. Come see Will. And if you want Boydie to come to your club, call him.
Or buy the book. Buy the book. Oh, awesome. We passed 10,000 copies, so go me, go us.
Congratulations, mate. That is, I mean,
well, I haven't even got the updated numbers post Christmas.
For people who don't know, that is like, that makes you, I think 5,000 makes you a bestseller in Australia.
Yeah,
like,
I was Googling that today actually, because I got the updated numbers from like mid December. So I'm hoping for a bit of a Christmas bump still, but it's like, I think it's a bit of a like ambiguous bestseller number where you think it's 5,000 to 10,000 in the first week. Is the actual bestseller number, at least in the States it is.
You're the bestseller.
Yeah, in the States, but here.
I would have to say, if I had to guess, I'm the best-selling, self-written number one draft pick book of all time. Man,
that's a pretty big call, man. Yeah.
Me and no one else.
Yeah, I don't know, mate. I loved Anthony Bannock's book, so I don't know.
Wow.
That's quite an obscure call, isn't it?
Yeah, well done on that one.
No, I mean, I've got some inside running on that. I played junior footy with Macca.
Still pretty good.
I remember when I was playing under 15 schoolboys at Windy Hill for Gippsland, and Anthony Bannock, Macca Bannock, number one draft pick for Richmond, made the second state, I think the Vic second side back in the days where we used to play a second side in his first year, but then had one of those careers that sort of faded away very quickly.
Quite Richmondy.
And that was because he was like one of those I'm a man when I'm 14 guys.
Oh, yeah.
And so, you know, like most players get to the AFL and then they can put on the weight and they can put on the bulk and the whatever. Yeah. He was that, like playing senior football when he was a junior. Like I remember him playing in this junior footy carnival. He only played one game or two games because he was playing in the Teal Cup at the same time. Oh, wow. And he came down and you were just like, you ever see that footage of like sometimes a 13-year-old Samoan kid playing against like other 13-year-olds?
Instagram's filled with it.
And just like those kids grabbing onto them as they're just dragging them down the field. That's what it was like playing footy with Macca Bannock.
Looking like Scott Morrison taking a child down. All right, thanks for joining us. See you next week. Go Dogs.
Go Dogs.
I gave my childhood to that role of the red, white and blue sea, and the knowledge that you had to love the Bulldog boys and me. 20 years on, I feel that longing hanging in September air. But the reason I go every week is to pretend you're still there. And they will find the glory one day, and I will throw it at your feet. It's a long, long road they're running for you, the Dogs of Footscray Street. long, long road they're running for you. The dogs of Footscray Streets.